With some toys, what you see is what you get, but not with a kaleidoscope.
I mean, like kaleidoscopes, they're a metaphor in life. You know, if you look at a kaleidoscope and you see a really beautiful image, and then you pass it to your neighbor, you know what happens. Something shakes and it changes.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, Iowa-made toys and Iowa toy makers. I'll talk with Stacy Banner. She and her husband make high-quality, eco-friendly wooden toys at their workshop in Des Moines. Kate Boson founded Boson Implements Incorporated to do for toy tractors what other implement dealers do for the real thing. I'll talk with her. And Leonard Olson makes his kaleidoscopes in Pomeroy. I'll talk with him as well. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Toys are flying off store shelves this time of year, but in the end, most children wind up with just a handful of toys they truly love and have relationships with. This hour, we'll talk about some Iowa-made toys and some remarkable Iowa toy makers. But we also want to hear your memories this hour. Share your memory of a favorite toy on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. As the hour goes on, we'll talk about toy tractors and other farm toys with Kate Boson of Boson Implements Incorporated. I'll also talk with Leonard Olson, owner of the Kaleidoscope Factory in Pomeroy. But first, a fairly new venture, Banner Toys in Des Moines. Stacy Banner and her husband, Jesse, make high-quality, eco-friendly wooden toys at their workshop in Des Moines. Hello, Stacy.
Hi there.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
How did this get started for you?
You know, I used to do in-home daycare, and one Christmas, Jesse decided he wanted to make the toys, make the kids toys for Christmas. So he got to work and made a couple trucks, and I said, gee, those are cute. Maybe we should sell them. And here we are 4 years later.
As someone who spent a lot of time with kids and had a lot of toys on hand, I'm sure, were there things that you felt were lacking in the toys that you could get your hands on?
Yes, very much so. We had more broken toys and lost parts and just things that didn't hold up to the kids playing with them for very long. So we definitely try and make a product that is better than that.
When your husband started making these toys, was this something that he had ever tried before, or was this just a new idea?
No, this was a new idea. I mean, he's got some woodworkers in his family and stuff, but he's pretty much self-taught everything we're doing. So,
and when you saw those toys, what was it about them that made you think, I think other people might want these too?
Our toys are very classic, traditional. It reminded me of toys that me and my older brother and my sisters played with when we were younger, stuff I used to see at my grandparents' house. Just kind of the nostalgia of them.
And since you had kids on hand, did you do any focus group research? Did you watch the kids play with the toys to see how they used them?
We definitely had some toy testers at our house. And it was neat to see over and over again that they would go for the wooden toys over the plastic toys. And their imagination just went crazy with the toys that didn't make noise. You know, all the electronic stuff that they already, those toys tell the kids how to play with them. And our toys let the kids decide what to do with them. And that, I mean, it was just a huge difference seeing that happen.
On your website, when I look at your toys, you also make a point of talking about the kinds of materials that you use. And you also talk about safety. As somebody who had a daycare, was safety of toys something that you were worried about as well? And I know you also have kids. So was that something that was a concern to you?
It is. You know, you don't want to make a toy that falls apart and a kid chokes on a piece of it, or just that it falls apart and parents have wasted their money. You want something that will last, so you can hand down. And so that's something that we really strive to create.
We also have had scares over the years with lead paint and that kind of thing being on toys that come from other countries. Was that also part of your concern?
Yeah. And just being a toy maker in the U.S., there are a ton of safety regulations and rules that we have to follow. So everything gets safety tested, and the paints and finishes we use are all organic, and we do that by choice. That's not something we're required to do by the federal law. It's just something we as parents and business owners have chosen to do.
And I am sure you've also seen a lot of kids put toys in their mouths.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, that's the first place toys seem to go.
And, of course, some of your toys are specifically designed to do that.
Right, yeah.
As far as the kinds of wood that you use for your toys, where does the wood come from?
We source all our lumber locally here in the Midwest, and it's responsibly harvested. We use cherry, maple, and walnut woods for the most part.
When you said maybe we should sell these, what was your vision?
I just thought a couple little craft shows would be a nice side income. It obviously has turned into way more than that. This is our job. Neither of us work for anyone else but the Inner Toys. So, it went from a couple craft shows to now it's our source of living.
That happened pretty quickly.
It really did. It really did. We started in October of 2011, and in February of 2012, my husband quit his corporate job to do the toys full time, and then I just closed my daycare about 6 months ago.
Wow. So what, and we'll start with your husband, and then obviously you joined him, but what made him want to make that shift?
He's very much an entrepreneur. This is not the first business we've tried. It is the first one that's been this successful. He's just kind of a work for yourself type of guy. He's got ideas and he likes to see them come to fruition.
And what made you decide, okay, I should give up the daycare work and work with him full time?
I've been doing the toys since we started as well, and it just made sense to not have two full-time jobs. we both love what we do, just making toys, and there's a lot of care that goes into each and every piece and all of our designs and stuff. So,
and you've gotten your kids involved as well?
Oh, yes. It is truly a family business that we own. Our kids, they're not down at the workshop very often, but when they are, they're helping sweep up or sand some toys, or they'll help put the beeswax finish on. And our littlest one is about 10 months old now, and, he's a toy tester. So.
Rattles and teethers, I can do that, Mom.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So, and even our parents and siblings come down and help us out when we need them. So it's nice having a business that everyone can be a part of.
Now, in shifting to having this business be your primary source of income, have you had to go through some pretty major lifestyle changes?
I mean, we definitely live more consciously and, pay attention to what we're doing both at the workshop and at our home, what energies we're using and monies we're spending and stuff, but...
And you're burning your scrap wood for heat? I read that somewhere.
We actually aren't currently doing that. When we started, we had a building on our property, which is where our first workshop was, and we put a wood-burning stove in there. So all of our scraps we could burn to heat the workshop so that we were recycling them and they weren't just going in the dumpster. And now we're in a bigger workshop. So the wood burning stove is not down here at the workshop, but we still find ways to use those scraps so that they're not all going into the dumpster as well.
So is it important to you to try to make this process full circle?
It really is. I just think the older we get and, now having kids, we see a lot more of what goes on, how much is wasted and how we contribute to that or used to. And so everything we can do to kind of help that and minimize our footprint is better.
Now, a lot of toy makers, you mentioned the craft shows or the farmers markets, mm-hmm. and that was kind of your inspiration. And we see a lot of toy makers who work on a fairly small scale and sell their things at events like that. You also have a website, and you've had orders from all over the world now.
We are on all 6 of the 7 continents.
So why do you think your toys have that kind of appeal?
You know, I think when someone gets one of our toys, they can tell right away what went into making that toy. You can tell that it's not mass produced. If you order 2 of the same Iowa State Rattle, they're both going to come just slightly different because they're hand cut out. They're not mass produced on machines and, you know, they don't go through assembly lines. They're made by just a couple people that put love into each toy.
This time of year, of course, a lot of people are buying a lot of toys. How much busier, and I realize your ordering date for online has already passed as far as getting things delivered by Christmas, but how much busier is this time of year than the rest of the year for you?
this year has absolutely astounded us. We couldn't have imagined how busy we would be this year. Originally, our cutoff date for Christmas was not going to be until tomorrow, but we had to move that up so that we can make sure we get everything out on time.
So how many hours a week have you and Jesse been putting in, do you think?
We take turns staying till about 2 in the morning. So Christmas is kind of our time to just, we get it all done, and then the rest of the year is a little slower for us.
And how do you get ready for your own family Christmas at the same time?
We have a lot of help from grandparents, and we definitely do some last-minute Christmas shopping for our own kids. Or online shopping, we do a lot of that. So.
You know, one of the things that I was thinking about in getting ready for the show, we are hoping that people will share their memories of a favorite toy that they had when they were kids. But one of the things that has changed so dramatically is kids just have so many toys now. You know, when we were kids and then the generation before had just a few toys. So the one or two really special ones really stood out. Do you feel like toys, even toys like yours, are getting lost in the shuffle?
I don't know. I don't think they are as much because we get customer feedback about, you know, how much the toys mean to someone, or, you know, they can't wait to pass it on to their grandchildren. And so I would like to hope that ours aren't getting lost in the mix.
Well, Stacey, thank you so much for being here today.
You're sure welcome. Thanks for having me.
Stacey Banner and her husband, Jesse, make high-quality, eco-friendly wooden toys at their workshop in Des Moines. You can find out more about Banner Toys online, and we'd love to hear your memories this hour. We're going to talk about farm toys in just a little while. I'll talk with a kaleidoscope maker a little bit later on, but please share your memories of your favorite toy from your childhood. You can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, tweet us at IPR Talk, or post on our Facebook page. This is Talk of Iowa.
From a sack carried by a man dressed in white and red. Little boy, don't you think it's time you were in bed? Close your eyes, listen to the skies. All is calm, all is well. Soon you'll hear Kris Kringle and the jingle bells, bringing old toy trains, little toy tracks, little boy toys. Coming from a sack carried by a man dressed in white and red.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour we're talking about Iowa-made toys. I'm talking with Iowa toy makers, and we're going to talk about Iowa toy traditions as well. We want to hear your memories. Share your memories at our email address, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also post on our Facebook page. Share your memory of one of your favorite toys from childhood. And a lot of kids have had special toy tractors. In fact, I know a lot of adults who have special toy tractors too. Kate Boson is the owner and president of Boson Implement Farm Toys. She's also a contributing author for many of the published farm toy books and price guides. She's on the National Farm Toy Museum Advisory Board. Hello, Kate.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Now, I know that you've been in this business for over 30 years. What attracted you to the farm toy business?
Well, I've had farm toys since I was a child. I, I've played with them all my life. And so as I got older and found out other people collected farm toys, that's what got me in. I started collecting, and it just evolved from there.
And when you developed Bosun implements, you actually patterned it after a farm implement business?
Yeah, when I started my business, I was working for a J.I. Case in one of their dealerships. So, I was coming home from a toy show, and I said, gee, what am I going to call my business? And I said, you know, I feel like a real implement dealer, but in miniature. I sell new and used tractors, I sell parts, and I do repairs and maintenance.
Just on a very, very tiny scale.
Yes, on a very scale. So that's where I came up with my name, Bosun Implements, your toy equipment dealer.
Now, what kinds of toys were you collecting before this became a business for you?
Well, when I was a kid, I had all the Matchbox farm toys. You know, that's what I had. I developed my own little farm on top of the ping pong table and farmed with those. And then when I went to work for Case, I started collecting the Case tractors. And then it's just kind of evolved around from there. Now I just kind of collect things that I really catch my eye.
And when did you realize that other people were collecting too?
I found that out when I was in college. I had a couple of professors that were starting to collect, and that opened my eyes to that. And then when I moved to Iowa, it's like, wow, they're all over the place.
Where were you before?
I grew up in South Dakota.
Oh, okay. you have plenty of farm toy credibility then. But did you find that this was bigger in Iowa because of our history with farm toys?
I don't know if to say it was bigger, but it's definitely big in Iowa. There's no doubt about that.
So we think about Ertl when we think about Iowa, and I know that you collect Ertl toys as well. Can you tell me a little bit about how that company got started?
That company started when Fred Ertl Sr. Was working in a factory in Dubuque, and they went on strike in 1945, and he had five boys to feed. So he had made some tractors in his he'd melted aluminum down in his furnace at home and made some for his sons, and then thought maybe he could sell those, you know, to raise some money to feed the family. And so that's what he did, and then he continued to make tractors and grew into the large Ertl company that we know today.
And apparently filling a desire that no one knew was there.
Yes, definitely.
and a major desire. How quickly did his company grow, do you know?
It grew. There was just a few tractors made in the family furnace. They bought a building downtown Dubuque and made tractors there until they moved to Dyersville in the late 50s.
And, of course, Dyersville is known not just for Field of Dreams, but as the farm toy capital of the world. We've talked about Iowa and South Dakota and there being a lot of interest in these toys here. Do you get most of your business from people in the Midwest?
Most of it's from the Midwest, but we do have customers around the world. Europeans are there. Areas there, you know, that are big in farming are definitely big in collecting, just as big as we are.
Now, of course, those first tractors that Fred Ertl made for his boys were meant to be played with. A lot of these models are not necessarily really toys that are meant to be played with. Can you kind of give me a picture of the market and the kinds of things that are made?
Ertl split their farm toys in two lines. One they call the replica line, and one they call the kids' toys. And the kids' toys are definitely meant for the kids to play with, where the replica line is designed for the collector to put on the shelf and enjoy and not to play with.
What other companies are making toys and replicas that are very popular these days as well?
Scale Models is located in Dyersville. That is Joe Ertl. He is one of the sons of Fred Ertl Sr. And he builds a lot of riding tractors and 1/16 scale tractors. And those are designed for the kids to play with. And then he does do a few collector models for the collectors to put out. And then also in Dyersville is Speccast, and they do a full line of collector tractors. And then Fred Ertl III, which would be a grandson, has started his own business called Diecast Promotions, and he's located in Piasta, Iowa. And then First Gear is also there in Fiesta. So we've got a large concentration of small, or not small, but large companies building farm toys.
Right. And so you get most of your business from the Midwest, but do you also hear from people around the world?
Yes, we do. We've got people all over Europe, Sweden, Belgium, the Netherlands, France, Germany, New Zealand, Australia, Brazil has a large group of collectors down there, South Africa, just all over.
We're talking about Iowa-made toys, Iowa toy traditions. We want to hear your memories this hour, and particularly right now, if you have fond memories of farm toys when you were growing up, or maybe you're a collector now, give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, 866-780-9100. Can you tell me about someone who got in touch with you that kind of surprised you? Can you give us an example?
Not real sure what you're going for there.
Well, when we talk about people looking for these toys all over the world, there have to have been a few surprises.
Yeah, there have been. We get not only people that are, living on the farms, but we get some where the kids have moved off the farm and they want replicas of what Grandpa wanted, had on the farm, or what Dad had on the farm. And sometimes we get people that have nothing farm-related, but they just want farm toys for their kids, or their kids have, expressed an interest in, farm-type toys.
And you mentioned that you do everything that a real implement dealer does. So do you actually manufacture parts to restore old farm toys?
No, we don't make the parts. We buy them from other companies. There actually are companies that sell just nothing but parts for toys, and we buy those, and our guys that do our restoration repair use those to fix them. And then we also carry a full line of customizing parts to add to your tractor. If your tractor doesn't have lights on it and you want lights, you can buy lights and light bars, antennas, windshield wipers, steps, all, different tires. We sell tires just like a real tire dealer. You want 18-4, 34s on your tractor, we can get you that in whatever scale.
So how much custom work do you do?
We sell the parts for it more than doing the actual custom work.
Because people want to do that work themselves.
They like to do it themselves. But we do have a few customers that don't want to do it themselves, and then I contact a few of our builders that will build that particular piece form or add those pieces on form. We got contacted by a scale company that wanted a 16-scale replica that they could take to the Louisville Farm Show and the other, Farm Progress shows, that they could set their scale on and show the potential customers how it works with that particular piece of implement. It was a seed tender they wanted. So I've got a builder right now building them a seed tender in 1/16 scale.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing. How many people work with you?
I've got 5 full-time employees and 4 or 5 part-time employees.
That is really remarkable. We're talking about farm toys right now. You're welcome to join in the conversation at 866-780-9100. I want to share some of the memories that people have been sharing with us this hour. We also would love to hear from you. This is from Kylie, who posted on our Facebook page. I had a Tonka dump truck. It was real steel, not plastic like you see today. We got our dump trucks from my Uncle Casey 1 year for Christmas, and we played with those things till they rusted. We still have them at my parents' house in the shed. This one is from Rachel. Books were a favorite toy, and I still have Cat in the Hat, my well-worn favorite from the 1950s. We kept the tradition going with our daughters and now grandchildren, giving each one a book for Christmas. And speaking of rust, when people want something fixed up, do you get toys that are in pretty rough shape?
Yes, we do. Most of the farm toys are cast aluminum, so they don't really rust like the steel Tonka toys do. So they just sandblast them and paint them, and, they come back out looking just like new or better.
Have you ever gotten something where you said, you know what, we just can't restore that?
Yes, I have had a few of those where they've been so rusted or corroded that they just wouldn't look good after they were done.
It's interesting to me that somebody would take a toy that is in that condition and ask you to restore it. Do you get the backstory from people? Do you ask them what the toy means to them?
Sometimes, yes, we do. A lot of times it's something that they've had and they finally found it in the barn, and that's why it's in that horrible condition. Or it was up in the attic and they finally found it. And so, yeah, a lot of people want their toy restored that they played with as a kid.
Now, you got into this business because you were fascinated by these toys yourself. How about the people that you work with, your employees? Did they also get into this because they were farm toy fans?
No, most of them got into it because they needed a job. But now they love it, and they love working with the farm toys.
Can you give me an idea of what some of these toys or models are worth?
A lot of the toys, you know, some of the toys from the 50s and 60s aren't worth a lot today. You know, they were dime store models back then, you know, like the Hubleys. They were almost a little bit generic, and a lot of people are really surprised when they find out a 50-year-old toy isn't worth, you know, but $5, $10 today. But then you take a toy like a John Deere 430 made by Ertl. It was a very short run toy, so not a lot of them produced. You know, that toy's worth $400 or $500.
Wow.
So it's a whole scale of pricing. It all just depends on what model it is, how desirable that model is, and what condition the toy is in.
Now, I guess for me, most of the people I know who collect these things collect John Deere, but I grew up in Cedar Falls, and of course Cedar Falls Waterloo is John Deere territory. Is there a most popular brand from your perspective?
Well, Deere definitely is the top brand, but it all goes back to what you had on the farm. You know, we have people that grew up with Alice Chalmers on the farm, and that's what they collect, and that's what they want. They don't want the green tractors.
Now,
so we get a lot of stories like that.
There are a number of different companies we talked about earlier in our conversation that are making farm toys today. Do you think that farm toys are as popular today as they were, say, when you were a kid?
I think so. I think they're just as popular, if not more popular, with both the kids and the adults.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's, you know, because it's something they get down and they can play with, and if they, you know, live on the farm, they're doing just what Dad did. You know, they go out and they plant in the spring and they harvest in the fall. And, you know, even city kids, you know, still visualize the farm and play, you know, farming. Or at least I did when I was a kid.
When you hear from people who want customization, what are the most common kind of customization changes that they want to make?
Well, most of the time they want it just like their tractor on the farm or just what Dad had. So their tractor had duals and maybe the toy does not, so we'll add dual wheels on the back for them, or we'll change the model number. A lot of times Ertl will make just one model number, but the real tractors have a family of model numbers that are, you know, based off the same frame. And so we'll change the decals for them and make it their model number. That's a real popular this time of the year.
Really?
Yeah.
And how do you do that?
We have a full line of decals. Actually, we're licensed by John Deere, Case IH, New Holland, and AGCO to make replacement decals for toys. So we actually do that ourselves. So we stock over 6,000 different decals. And so it's just a matter of peeling the old decal off and putting the new one on.
You know, we were talking earlier about, I was talking with a toy maker who lives in Des Moines, and clearly these are toys that are not just for children. There are a lot of adults who are collecting these farm toys as well. How busy is this time of year for you?
It's very busy. We feel like Santa's workshop here, trying to get everything shipped out to everybody in time for Christmas.
How are you holding up?
We're doing pretty good. We're putting in long hours, but we're getting the stuff out the door.
And how long does the season last for you? Is there a point where you just have to stop and say, we cannot ship anymore?
We will ship right up to the 23rd. We just say, if you want to pay the freight, we'll get it out the door. Put it on the truck.
I can imagine that for a lot of people, if Grandpa or Dad collects these things, this becomes the gift to get every year.
Yes, it does. There's a lot of people that contact us. I get my dad a tractor every year. Can you tell me what's new this year that he wouldn't have? And so then we go through and give them the choices of what the brand new models are that just came out this year.
You have been a contributing author and done a lot of helping out with farm toy books and price guides and that kind of thing. And I know you work with the National Farm Toy Museum Advisory Board. Can you give me an idea of how many of these toys there are out there? How many different kinds?
Oh, there's probably about 15,000 different farm toys out there.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Is there one that you're searching for?
Me, myself, I pretty much have everything I want in my collection, but I always keep my eye out for something that I don't know about, which doesn't happen very often.
And how large is your personal collection?
Not that large, because I've kept it mainly to case.
Okay.
And foreign toys. I used to travel a lot internationally back in the 90s, and so I was trying to get farm toys from each of the different countries I would visit. And from the manufacturers of that country.
Wow. Can you put a number on it?
Oh, I probably only have 300 or 400 items.
All right. Just only 300 or 400. Oh, Kate, thank you so much for talking with me today.
It's been my pleasure.
Kate Boston is owner and president of Boston Implement Farm Toys. Coming up in just a moment, I will talk with a kaleidoscope maker, the owner of the Kaleidoscope Factory in Pomeroy, Iowa. We'd also love for you to share your memories this hour. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa.
Toys means a sack full of joys for millions of girls and for millions of boys. When Christmas Day is here, the most wonderful day of the year.
A jack in the box waits for children to shout.
Wake up! Don't you know it's time?
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about Iowa-made toys and talking with Iowa toy makers. We're also sharing your memories this hour. So please tell us about one of your favorite toys from childhood. You can post on our Facebook page. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. We have this from Libby. My favorite dolls growing up were Tootie and Todd. They were Barbie's younger twin brother and sister. I wanted a car for them, but the Barbie convertible was too big and too expensive, so I got a Tonka red Jeep. They fit perfectly, and it was much tougher than the plastic pink thing that Barbie drove. We also have this from Emily. As a 90s kid, I wanted a Tamagotchi, a digital pocket pet, so much that I actually made several Tamagotchis out of colored on paper that I laminated with tape. Eventually, I think my grandma felt bad and bought me a knockoff dog one that I cherished, my very first pet. And we have this from John in Cedar Falls. He says, I'd like to include the Cedar Valley Woodworking Association in the list of toy makers in Iowa. Every year they make and donate hundreds of toys to the Salvation Army to be given away to needy families. Thank you so much for sharing your memories with us. And now I'm going to talk with Leonard Olson. He's the owner of the Kaleidoscope Factory in Pomeroy, Iowa, where he makes and sells beautiful handmade kaleidoscopes. Hello, Leonard.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, this whole venture started for you with a heart attack. Tell me what happened.
Well, I was driving home from town and I had a side ache. We have a lot of heart disease in the family, so fortunately I paid attention in a cardiac rehab session that my father was in way back when, and the nurse said, never ignore any pain above the waist. And again, a side ache, and I was driving home and I just didn't feel right. Called 911, and four ambulance rides later, I was in the Sioux City Hospital.
Wow.
And but it's still a good story, because when I was in the hospital, they have a gift store there called the Kaleidoscope. And some friends came to visit me up in intensive care, and they saw the kaleidoscope thing, and they went up and said, we want to buy our friend a kaleidoscope. And they said, well, we don't actually have kaleidoscopes here. And you have to know these people to appreciate this story. But he says, well, it says kaleidoscope right over your door. And I don't know if you know much about retail, but people will never buy the last one of anything on the shelf. They either think it's the worst one out there, or it's like the last piece of pie. They're too polite to take it. But they had one in the back, so they brought me this really nice kaleidoscope. But I later learned it's made by a woman in New Jersey named Carolyn Bennett. It's an oil-filled, three-mirror, front-surface mirror kaleidoscope. It's just beautiful. And it was no great epiphany. Once in a while, when I get to telling stories to my customers, I'll tell them how the ceiling tiles open up and the voices told me to start making kaleidoscopes, but I have to stop myself because that's not at all what happened. But I did notice how doctors and nurses who had no business coming to see me were coming to see that cool kaleidoscope. And it just followed away in my hard drive for future reference. I was a computer programmer. I owned a business in Denver, and I telecommuted from the family farm, so a whole different lifestyle than I have right now. But in cardiac rehab, I learned I shouldn't be playing with computers and working with computers, so I started butchering wood. And one thing leads to another. Actually, I traded my nicotine addiction in for a power tool addiction, so I have power tools everywhere now.
That sounds like a healthier addiction.
Oh, much, much healthier. I breathe a lot of sawdust, but my doctor, I see him every 6 months. He says he doesn't hear anything there yet, so we're okay.
All right, that's good news. And did you... I mean, why did your friends buy you a kaleidoscope? Was there something?
No, just a fluke.
Fluke.
Well, everybody loved a kaleidoscope, the old Steven scope she had as a kid. And a lot of people don't see them that often. They kind of come and go in the marketplace. But it was just a fluke.
But you had kaleidoscopes as a kid.
Right.
And you had been curious enough about your kaleidoscope to want to know how it worked, right?
Right. I ask this question to almost everybody who comes in my door if they tore those apart. And most people say, well, of course not. You know, they were well-behaved children. I'm about 1 out of 100 people tore theirs apart to see how they run. And I was one of those 1 out of 100.
All right. So when you tore it apart, what did you find?
Well, it was just a sheet of aluminum bent in an angle and a bunch that looked like the chips from the bottom of a fishbowl is the best way I could describe it. It was interesting, but it wasn't at all what I expected. I know that.
And, of course, then you didn't have a kaleidoscope anymore after
right.
that.
I did have knowledge, and that was good, too. My mother was a teacher before she was married, so it was okay. I didn't get in any trouble or anything. I just had knowledge instead of a kaleidoscope, and that was a good trade-off.
All right, so you got that cool kaleidoscope when you were in the hospital after your heart attack. You mm-hmm. observed that people were really interested in it and wanted to come and look at it. Where did you make the connection? You know what? Hey, I should make those.
Well, it all came about just from the power tools. I kept acquiring more and more power tools. And about 2 years later, I got a lathe. No idea why. I just thought it'd be fun to have a spinny toy. And there's a catalog from the Woodturner. It's called the Woodturner's Catalog. They had kits and parts to make kaleidoscopes. And this was Christmas of 99. I made a few for friends, and of course, they loved them. And the big tipping point... The bar down in Palmer. In fact, by the way, you said I was from Palmer. That's history. I'm in Pocahontas now.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
I can be wherever I want to be. I've got a truck. So, but it was when I was still in Palmer, and the bar down there, wonderful person, Byron, does live music. He's just a gem. And he used to do a benefit every year for hemophilia. He would raise maybe $5,000 to $8,000 a year to help kids go to camp to learn how to deal with their hemophilia. And part of the fundraisers, we'd give him stuff that we'd made for an auction. And I'd given him wooden toys. They'd go $5-$10. You know, just like the cost of the wood is about all you get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I made him one of those kaleidoscopes, spring of 2000. And he hyped it up quite a bit before the auction. And the night of the auction, people came up and said, do you sell those? And I said, we'll find out. And it went for $110 on the auction. So actually, it was pure greed that drove me in the business.
Well, it sounds like there was a little more to it than that. But when you put a kaleidoscope together, what kind of options do you have? I mean, beyond turning the wood and making that look like you want it to look, what kind of options do you have as far as creating the images?
Well, the images fall under two categories. Most of them, everybody thinks of the kaleidoscope should be like those traditional Steven scopes where you turn the end. And actually, very few of mine do you turn the end. In fact, I designed one just because I got yelled at so much for I didn't have a real kaleidoscope. So the top of the line has got a ball bearing in it, and I turn the wood. And I have a fun turnaround story. This woman who made the first kaleidoscope I had, she has for sale these cells in Woodturner's catalogs. And when you can get them, you can maybe buy two or three at a time for $26 a piece, and that's not near enough for me. So I contacted her and asked if I could buy them direct. And she says, I'll do you one better. She sent me a container with a line on it, and I buy my own pretties, and I put them in, and then she does them for me. And I've had a couple of interesting custom-made ones. These take a long time, but you may be familiar with the Jewish custom. At the end of the wedding, stomp on the glass and holler mazel tov, everybody.
Right.
Well, I've had, for a 20th anniversary, I took those shards and had them put into a kaleidoscope.
Oh, wow.
Another one was a counselor from Boys Town in Omaha, took a trip to Rome, and as part of his remembrance there, he picked up Mille Fiori and all kinds of little jewels and gems, and we put that into a kaleidoscope for him, too. So that's the high end. And the low end, actually, I make a $10 PVC kit, and I just throw in plastic beads from Kmart for kids to play with there. And the big seller is called a telescope. It's a combination of the word telescope and kaleidoscope, but there's no beads in it. It's just the mirrors and then a marble at the end that acts like a fisheye lens, so the whole world becomes a kaleidoscope. And those are probably my most popular item, because once people understand them, they've never seen anything like it. And whatever you look at, like if you go out in your rose garden, the roses turn into a kaleidoscope. In fact, there's a good example of that at Ryman Gardens at Iowa State. They have a outdoor telescope there in a bowl of flowers. And wonderful concept.
So you're in Pocahontas. Do you get a lot of walk-in business, or are people finding you from all over the place?
Well, they come from all over the place. I get a little more walk-in business here because Pocahontas is a bigger town, county seat. But actually, I thrive. In fact, you only need about so many kaleidoscopes, so I've pretty much worn the locals out. They're very wonderful support.
Yours are designed to last, right?
So they're never going to wear out. I'll wear out way before they do. But no, I get people. I haven't counted this year, but last year I had 32 states and 12 foreign countries through my door. And we had an art walk here a couple weeks ago, besides Pocahontas, I had 35 other cities in my shop just for a Thanksgiving weekend art walk, which was real gratifying. It was way better than we expected. But we caught little towns. We had all the major metro areas, Chicago, Denver, Minneapolis, Omaha, Kansas City, Des Moines. We didn't get St. Louis. They must have been busy doing something else. But other than that, we had all the major metros within driving distance showed up in Pocahontas that weekend.
Now, obviously, you're making some very special kaleidoscopes, and it's clear that particularly the higher-end ones that you were talking about are not really intended for children. Do you get a sense, are people buying these for kids, or are they buying them for themselves?
No, I make them for all age levels. One fun customer, they're from out west, Wyoming, somewhere, doesn't matter, but they came, sometimes people put me on, I'm on the list, they're on a road trip, and they find me on the internet, and they make a point to stop here. And this couple, I'm pretty sure it was from Wyoming. Well, it fits into horse country because they were looking and thinking, and they were going to buy one for for themselves to show to the grandkids. And they bought my egg kaleidoscope, and their criteria was that one would probably survive a trip into the horse stall. That was why they bought it.
Egg kaleidoscope. What does that mean?
Well, it's the shape of an egg. It's about the size of it's a little bigger than an egg, but it looks like an egg, only it's made out of wood.
All right, and it's designed to withstand a horse stepping on it?
Well, that wasn't my plan, but evidently they thought so. So if they wanted it, I'll certainly sell it to them with that condition.
Now, being a computer coder in the past, are there parallels between what you're doing now and what you were doing then?
Oh, certainly, yeah. You're always doing workarounds. Something goes wrong, and it's just that's part of running any business. Like right now, nothing I can do about it, but you have to stay on top of it. I've got a UPS truck with marbles, some of my marbles in it, in somewhere in California. It finally took off again this morning after sitting around for 2 days. And so you have to pay attention, juggle, and you have to count parts, and you have to know what's missing. I just ordered, I think, about 100 cribbage pegs this morning. I have a CNC router, and I make custom-made cribbage boards, and they're flying off the shelf this winter. And so I had to pay attention this morning and get some cribbage pegs in, rather, before Christmas here.
Do you find that this is a similar kind of creative outlet to being a coder?
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing. You're being creative. The major difference is when you're a computer programmer, nobody appreciates what the incredibly hard work it is, and they don't get it. They sit and they tell you when you should have it done, like they knew what was going on. It's very creative on both sides. The difference is here, I love it so much because people appreciate what I do.
So that was missing in the earlier career.
Much. In fact, that was in cardiac rehab. They work with your head as much as your exercise and mm-hmm. stuff. That was a big point. Yeah, yeah. We all need the strokes, I guess, is one of the words. But yeah, my lifestyle is much better now than it was before.
Now you mentioned making special kaleidoscopes using shards of glass. What other kinds of things could you put in a kaleidoscope as a keepsake?
Well, pretty much anything you want. And I make these $10 kits, and I encourage kids, when Grandma's here with them, I say, now go to Grandma's jewelry chest because she's got lots of diamonds. She doesn't care if you use them. But I was at a Wiegert Farm Festival down the road here, and kids were putting in kernels of oats that had come from the threshing machine just to see what would happen. Of course, it doesn't look very good, but it's for an experiment. So they find out that oats is not a good thing to put in a kaleidoscope. Basically, it has to be translucent to look pretty. And that opens up the doors to a lot of possibilities.
Okay. So, I mean, you mentioned plastic, you mentioned marbles, glass. Are there some things that I wouldn't spring to mind that you've been able to put in a kaleidoscope?
Seashells.
Oh.
Seashells look really wonderful. Small seashells, they're kind of a mellow, I bet they lower your blood pressure. I can't document it, but I bet they do. I mean, they're real relaxing to look at, and especially if you've got a connection to the water somewhere.
Absolutely.
I've had these. I used to sell wholesale. I got into a place where I got in some wholesale. Had four galleries in Hawaii, and that's what they bought was the seashell ones, because people had the connections to the sea.
Do you have a favorite one that you've made?
That I've made?
Mm-hmm.
No.
No?
I buy good stuff from other people. In fact, I don't have that many kaleidoscopes. I wish I had more sometimes, but it's more fun to sell them. I send them to good homes. An artist friend of mine says, oh, you're like my wife. Or his wife is an artist. Says, you're like my wife. You just want to get these things out to good homes. So, no, I don't really. I have that one that I got when I was in the hospital. That's,
sure,
of course, very special to me.
Right.
But other than that, no.
So you've never made one that you just felt you couldn't part with?
Oh, no. They're expendable.
How long does it take you to make one?
Well, it depends on what you mean by make it. I can produce maybe three good ones a day. But to be a kaleidoscope maker, there's a lot more involved than just making kaleidoscopes. Like a lot, when people come into my shop, it's theater here. I learned that early on. If you put my kaleidoscopes on a gallery shelf, people will look at it and say, oh, that's nice, and walk away. They come in here, I look like Santa Claus. My shop is the colors of Santa Claus. It's a carefully marketed thing. But they get a show. They get to see a kaleidoscope being made when they come to visit me. And
so you're out there in front doing the work.
Yeah. It's called the experience economy. There's books about it and everything. But I learned actually from a kaleidoscope retailer up in Manly, Carl Schilling up there. He has kaleidoscopes2.com. And that's where I buy a kaleidoscope if I want a nice one, because Carl's got them from kaleidoscope makers from all over the world. But Carl introduced me to that concept. Intuitively, I was already doing it, but he explained to me what I was doing right.
Oh, interesting.
And I've
Well, you said it by design. You can't just look like Santa Claus on purpose. You had to come by that naturally, right?
Well, pretty much. I got my grandmother's white hair, so that helps.
We have Monica posted this on our Facebook. Just a shout out to Leonard. We did a puppet show in his shop in Pocahontas last June.
Yeah, that's another one of my passions, is interesting live whatever. I've had, she was here with the puppets, and we have a History Boy Theater down in Jefferson. I had a two-person version of Oklahoma here, and I packed the place. And I have a Teddy Roosevelt impersonator coming in February. That's my next big show that's coming into the shop.
Leonard, it's hard to imagine you having, you know, I don't know you other than the last 15 minutes we've spent together, but I have a really hard time imagining you spending your whole day all by yourself sitting at a computer. You sound like a guy who really loves people and loves to engage with the community.
Actually, I do, but I'm a severe introvert. If you study introverts and extroverts, I need my alone time, my quiet time and whatever. But I enjoy talking to people, there's no doubt. But I couldn't do it all day long. I can say that. I couldn't do what you do. I know that.
Well, I don't look anything like Santa, so you're definitely got one over me there. Leonard, do you have something that you dream of making that you haven't made yet?
Oh, I've thought of, I'd like to make a big parlor kaleidoscope where you have a spinning tray and a kaleidoscope pointing down to it, and then you just choose your own objects and put it on the tray and spin around. So that'd be my only, you know, as far as kaleidoscopes. I'm always looking for other stuff to make. In fact, if you Google Magic Pixie Dust Dispenser, not only am I at the top of the list, I'm the only one on the list.
Really?
And I make a few of those from time to time. There's a lot of things you can make out of wood, and I do it until the ADD kicks in, and then I go do something else.
Leonard, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Leonard Olson is the owner of the Kaleidoscope Factory in Pocahontas. We've been talking about Iowa toys and with Iowa toy makers all hour and sharing some memories as well. This one's from Jim in Cedar Rapids. I was 12 years old and had recently found out that summer the truth about Santa from one of my older siblings. I was one of 12 kids. We lived on an 80-acre farm, so we weren't affluent. My older brother and I repeatedly asked our parents for a Daisy Pump BB gun, each which listed then for $14.95. The year was 1958. My parents repeatedly said it was out of the question because they couldn't afford to buy that. Remember, I was one of 12 kids. That Christmas morning, my brother and I raced downstairs and discovered under the tree two new Daisy Pump BB guns. As I picked mine lovingly up, I looked across the room at my parents' smiling faces and exclaimed, "Boy, that Santa is a great guy." This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.
When it stopped, when it stood still, I never knew just what it was, and I guess I never will. The first time that I picked it up,
I had a big surprise. 'Cause right on the bottom were two big buttons that looked like big green eyes.
I first pushed one,
and then I pushed the other, and then I twisted its lid.
And when I set it down again, here is what it did. It went zip, and it moved, and then it stopped, and
neenong, neenong,
stood still.